United States. The Libertarians. What's the point of the 3% party? Today's libertarians grapple with whether to go for national influence or local wins.
Donald Trump should have seen it coming. He arrived on May 25th at the Libertarian Party's National Convention in Washington, D.C., hoping to expand his support, but the crowd mostly responded with boos. Attendees lacked enthusiasm for a protectionist who added $8.4 trillion to America's national debt. They also spent the weekend squabbling among themselves. After losing presidential races for more than half a century, the Libertarian Party is facing an identity crisis. Libertarians share a baseline belief that the state best serves the people by leaving them alone. Yet for a party that peaked at 3.3% of the popular vote in 2016, it harbours a striking amount of intellectual diversity. Convention attendees could join the Bitcoin caucus, got inflation, or the emo caucus, live free or cry. A pair from the pro-life libertarian caucus wore Make Argentina Great Again hats, a nod to Javier Milei, the country's libertarian president. One booth advertised a tantalising, if dubious, proposition. Opting out of income tax, it's not just for millionaires. The Radical Caucus offered free campaign buttons. Many called for the abolition of government agencies, from the CIA to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. A particularly efficient libertarian could opt for the abolish all the things design. Those with more niche interests could pick sell the Grand Canyon, let's buy machine guns from vending machines, or re-legalise CAT. The most intense divisions are about strategy. The hardline Mises Caucus, named after Ludwig von Mises, a pro-market Austrian economist, has dominated the party's leadership since 2022 and adopted populist rhetoric. The group was responsible for inviting Mr. Trump, as well as Robert F. Kennedy Jr., an independent candidate, to speak at the convention. The debate about whether to invite the outside candidates at times seemed more heated than the Libertarians' own presidential nomination fight. On May 24th, the convention's first day, one attendee yelled into the microphone, "I would like to propose that we go tell Donald Trump to go fuck himself." The crowd cheered. "I would rather us focus on the Libertarian candidates," said Jim Fulner from the Radical Caucus. "I'm fearful that come later this summer, when I'm working the county fair, someone will say, 'Oh, Libertarians, you guys are the Donald Trump people.'" Nick Apostolopoulos from California welcomed the attention Mr. Trump's speech brought and said his presence proved this party matters and that they have to try and appeal to this voting bloc. Few believed that Mr. Trump won much support. He promised to appoint a libertarian to his cabinet and commute the sentence of Ross Ulbricht, who is serving life in prison after founding the dark web equivalent of Amazon for illegal drugs. The crowd responded positively to Mr. Trump's nod to a libertarian cause célèbre, but booed after he asked them to choose him as the Libertarian Party's presidential nominee. Mr. Trump hit back, "If you want to lose, don't do that. Keep getting your 3% every 4 years." Mr. Kennedy was more disciplined, tailoring his speech to the crowd by highlighting his opposition to COVID lockdowns. Even so, he received a cool reception. "Libertarians want a candidate who will promise to abolish, not reform, government agencies." The reality is that libertarians are more interested in positions than personalities. The exception may be the broad admiration for Ron Paul, a retired Republican congressman who many cite as their lodestar. But at 88, Mr. Paul has achieved the difficult feat of being considered too old to plausibly run for president. The party opted for someone 50 years younger but virtually unknown on the national stage. Chase Oliver, a former Libertarian candidate in Georgia for the United States Senate, won the nomination on the seventh ballot. Hitherto, his greatest political accomplishment was pulling in 2% of the vote in the Peach State, which forced a runoff between the Democratic and Republican candidates. Aligned with the more left-leaning classical liberal caucus, he took aim at Mr. Trump and Mr. Kennedy in his acceptance speech. He said he wants to unify the party. But the party is far from unified. Given the choice between Mr. Oliver and none of the above, more than a third of the delegates preferred no one. It remains uncertain whether the party's candidate will appear on the ballot in all 50 states, as several previous nominees have. If the Libertarian candidate has any influence on the presidential election this year, it will be as a spoiler in a close-run swing state. Mr. Oliver's victory marked a rare defeat for the Mises caucus. But the re-election of Angela McArdle, a Mises caucus member as the National Party chairperson, is perhaps more important to the future of the movement. Ms. McArdle faced criticism for her decision to invite outside candidates to speak. Controversy over the Mises caucus had led several state delegates to split, and much of the convention's floor time was eaten up over fights about whom to recognise. The rise of the Mises wing of the party has led more pragmatically minded members to largely give up on the project of advancing libertarian ideas by building a political party. The party struggles on big stages, such as in presidential, gubernatorial or Senate contests. Yet it occasionally wins municipal elections, leaving some to wonder whether national activism is pointless or even counterproductive. Why would libertarians invest time in a hopeless race for president when they could direct their energy to fighting a local sales tax or antiquated laws restricting alcohol sales? Andy Craig, director of election policy at the Rainey Centre, a think tank, was involved in the Libertarian Party for about a decade, but disengaged after growing frustrated with the Mises caucus. He knows several libertarians who have turned to local activism. They're getting wins at the ballot box and in city councils and some state legislatures. The party faithful believe that national and local activism are not mutually exclusive. Elijah Ghisarelli won fewer than 3,000 votes when he ran for governor of Rhode Island as a libertarian 2 years ago, but he argues that the party has a long record of success, so long as the definition of success expands beyond winning elections. He says the party succeeds by shifting the Overton window, or the spectrum of political ideas that are generally considered acceptable. Asked about a libertarian debate years ago, when a candidate was jeered for supporting driving licenses, Mr. Ghisarelli smiles and says this proves his point. For people that haven't been exposed to libertarian thoughts and conversations, I can imagine how something like no driver's license sounds crazy, he acknowledges, before suggesting that drivers would still learn competency behind the wheel from friends and family. If you actually think about what would happen without driver's licenses, you'd be like, oh, okay, it's not a big deal at all.